Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We might just be in France, but this is global. These players are icons, their stories are noble. In fact, each story into the game is golden. It's way more than just a game. It's a player's story into the pitch and all that she overcame. It's football 2019, and this is its brand new face. Football Inside Out by Copper 90.
Yo, it's Monkey here.
And I'm Heath.
And this is Football Inside Out, a podcast from Copa 90. We're coming to you every day from the Copa 90 clubhouse in Paris, bringing all the excitement from the 2019 Women's World Cup in France.
And here's what we've got for you today. So Beth Mead chatted with us prior to the World Cup, an England star. We've also got the man in the know, Ellie Menjam, bringing you everything you need to know about England and Scotland ahead of their match tonight. But first, we've got a little recap from last night's matches, as well as all the other things you need to know going into your day.
Football Inside Out by Copper 90.
So, number one is penalties. We had our first penalties of the tournament, including a very controversial one in the Spain-South Africa match, where it was given on VAR. It was a dangerous challenge, but I actually don't think it was.
No?
No.
I don't think it was a penalty.
No, you think it was a yellow card, though?
I think it was a second yellow card. She left her leg out. She was trying to get a little meat on the end of those studs, for sure.
Yeah, I think it was just bad form in a kick rather than a tackle.
Bad form gets you a lot of yellow cards.
That's true.
Regardless. But Roberto Baggio just recently said that he still doesn't sleep well at night after missing his World Cup final penalty. But, you know, Jennifer Hermoso stepped up and nailed two today.
Yeah, she did.
No worries. Number two, finish your chances. China did well for large spells in the match, but didn't finish the two huge chances that they did. That led to Germany going on to manage that match and winning 1-0, which has now extended their streak of not losing in the group stages for 17 matches dating back to 1995. And on the flip side, finishing your chances, shoot your shot is what I say. South Africa scored with their first shot on target ever at a World Cup. So take that chance, whether it's at a bar, a cafe, nightclub, or on the pitch. Take your chances.
No, we've only got a minute left to get through these.
Okay.
So number three, 9.8 million French people tuned into the opening match of the first match of the World Cup.
Hooray! Round
of
applause. All right, that's amazing. I like that. It seems like a great number. I haven't compared it to anything, but it seems like a really great number and a great start because they absolutely battered Korea Republic.
Yes, they did. Number four, bit of sad news. Marta is ruled out of the World Cup opener for Brazil today. So you will not see her play. You might see her on the bench, but only in name, apparently, and support, but not on the field.
Wow. So will she dress then?
I don't know.
Maybe she'll all dress.
She'll come comfy.
I think in the World Cup, all 23 dress. I don't think there's like an 18. I think all 23 dress.
So oh, they do.
Maybe she'll just be dressed.
Maybe like a John Terry.
Yeah.
Just come dressed on the field and pick up the cup and be like
full kit wanker. And last one, we've got some matches. Who do we have playing
today? We've got Australia versus Italy, Brazil versus Japan, and the big one, England versus Scotland.
Why does that have to be the big one?
Because I'm English.
Ah, okay. I had no idea by the accent. All this time I thought you were Australian.
Oh,
learning so
God.
Much about you. But yeah, big matches. I think the biggest match day of the World Cup so far. Three teams that could potentially reach the semifinals all playing in different matches, and not to rule out the other three because there could be some Cinderella stories, but yeah, amazing.
And those are our five things that you need to know for today. Now we're going to get into the rest of the episode and a whole new day of action on the Women's World Cup today. And our man Ellie Mingham has got the inside score. Here's what you really need to know about England.
Ranked the highest ever third in the world, the England team that heads to France may look relatively similar to the Canada 2015 team on the pitch, but off it, they're radically different from 4 years ago, thanks to huge investment from the FA in all manners of the game. And whilst the England side of 2015 defeated all expectations by making it to the semi-finals, eventually winning the third place playoff, that would be the least of expectations for this side, who won the recent She Believes Cup ahead of powerhouses Brazil, Japan, and even the USA. Add to that an array of bona fide stars in every position, from Lucy Bronze in defence to Jill Scott and Georgia Stanway in the middle, and the likes of Fran Kirby, Tony Duggan and Nikita Paris up front, and it really wouldn't be too far of a stretch to say the Lionesses have every chance of winning the tournament. But here's what you really need to know about England.
Inside score.
England has always prided itself as being the home of football, thanks to its illustrious history, from inventing the modern rules of the game, to its iconic 1966 World Cup win, to its world-famous Premier League. But when it comes to the women's side, they've always lagged behind other nations, who dedicated far more resources and time. But all that changed a few years ago, when the FA implemented its Game Plan for Growth programme in 2017, which created a complete revamp of the entire women's setup. The women's national side saw massive investment in all manners from the senior to junior levels. The country's national league, the WSL, or the Women's Super League, became the only full-time professional league in Europe and moved from a summer to winter calendar. The top four tiers were given new, dynamic, modern branding to appeal to a broader audience. Massive investment was implemented in attempting to reach the FA's target of doubling the number of affiliated girls and women's teams from 6,000 to 12,000. And a bid was put in to host the 2021 Women's Euros. In a matter of short years, the Game for Growth movement is already paying off, with direct qualification of France 2019, an impressive She Believes Cup tournament win, WSL crowds up despite the more difficult weather conditions of the new alternate calendar, youth participation numbers through the roof, and the 2021 Euros bid successfully won. And the corporate world has followed suit, with Barclays Bank and Boots Pharmacy announcing three-year, £10 million sponsorships of the WSL and the five British Isles teams respectively. For a long time, the women's game has suffered the chicken or egg dilemma, where the question has always been, do you invest to create success, or do you need the success first before the investment comes in? Well, it's fair to say, England and the FA may just have found the answer, proving that if you invest, the success on and off the pitch will eventuate, and a positive campaign in France may just be the inspiration for further investment in the game and inspire other nations who lag behind to do the same.
Come on, England. Wow. That's all I got to say on that.
I want to take this right now, take it to the U.S. Soccer Federation, and go, they're coming. I literally, you look at all the infrastructure that they're building, and I know we constantly talk about the U.S. being a place that's well ahead of a lot of other countries, but a lot of nations are catching up, and this is a true long term game plan that I'm kind of jealous about. I'm kind of like, I want to take this as the blueprint to the U.S. and other nations and go, this is how you do it, because they're going to be the best in the world soon, so you need to step your game up.
Yeah, we're definitely coming for you. I think that I heard this quite cool fact, actually. I was listening to Phil Neville on another podcast, and he was saying that in the camp that they did recently before the World Cup, obviously the men were training as well because they have the Nations Cup coming up, or they got beat by Holland, but let's not talk about that. And they gave priority to the women's team because their competition was more of a priority to the England camp. And so they got all the best digs. And I think that's great because that way everybody's on board. It's not just like a singular thing. Obviously, Gareth Southgate is on board and the whole FA, they are prioritising the women. And that's probably the first time that that's ever happened. I know the French national team had to make way for a men's friendly, even though that they were preparing for a World Cup in their home nation.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Mm. That's such interesting information. It's such a cool thing to see because it's coming from the teams themselves, which are kind of interconnected, right? So it's not like somebody saying one's less or more. They're just saying this is what needs to happen. And it's a very logical response. A lot of times what seems like logical isn't still in the women's game. And to see that becoming just, this is a logical conclusion, so we're going to do it because it makes sense.
Yeah.
Should be the most common conversation that we're having, and it's still not quite here yet. So it's good to hear that they're doing that.
Yeah, it's really cool. It was really cool to hear that fact, actually. And I think Phil Neville's like a really exciting manager to have for England, because obviously he's the first ex sort of professional men's player to manage the women's national team. And that's such an easy thing for the other players to buy into, because he's been there, he's been to the major tournaments, he's been managed in those major tournaments, he's got caps for England and for one of the biggest clubs in the world, Manchester United. So if I was a player, I'd be hyped to play under him, you know, and to hear his knowledge and to learn from him. So absolutely. I'm excited for them.
You've mentioned so many times, you know, already of your younger career of looking up to male players. Mm. It's still the case, right? I mean, myself, when I was younger, I looked up to the 99er team. Yeah, we had the 94 World Cup in the US, and that was a big moment for just general soccer fandom. But when you can rally behind a team that's actually talented and it's good and is winning things, just like they have now on the England squad, She Believes Cup, third place finish in a World Cup, now one of the favorites with a really, really talented squad and bona fide stars, but an actual legitimate chance to win something. Mm-hmm. It's sort of that recipe that doesn't just make more people fans, but just legitimizes it all in a way that makes it fun. You know, it's a really cool thing to get behind.
When I went to the opening game the other day, the atmosphere of that place was so electric, and the crowd were actually not what I was expecting. I didn't know really what to expect, but I think what I'd been told was a lot of the crowds are like a lot of families and a lot of young kids. But in actual fact, it was such a mix and broad range of people.
Which match was this?
The opening France versus Korea game.
Oh, the one that you ditched me to go to the opening. Yeah.
But it was like, you know, really, really young girls, really young boys, older guys, older women, families, groups of lads just on their own, like early 20s, late teens, who would start chants and then like everyone else would join in. Mexican waves, whistles. I saw a pride flag being taken out of a bag near the Korea stand, massive one, and sort of waved by a few hundreds of fans, which I've never seen in a football match. I've never seen a pride flag be brought out at a game. You might see a few billboards, like, you know, which are obviously put up by the club or whatever, but to actual fans to bring it out, that's a first for me. So the atmosphere was so, so inclusive and so electric. And yeah, I've got a bit emotional, actually. At the end, the players stuck around and did a sort of lap of honour sort of thing to say thank you. And it was like a massive party. Not a single person left. 40,000 people didn't leave for a good 20 minutes. They just cheered and laughed and had a good time.
How much of is it an example of France being the host and turning up for the first match and what England will get to experience now, winning a Euro bid in the future? Do you think it matters? Do you think that the players on the pitch played off of the stadium, or do you think it was sort of like a? Do you think that the performance improved because of the rallying of?
Yeah, totally.
Was it a home crowd?
It was a home crowd. Yeah, it was a home crowd. But to be fair to South Korea, they had quite a few fans behind one of the goals, and they turned up. They were a lot smaller in capacity, but they had this massive drum, and it was like drumming through the. They did not stop drumming through the whole match, even though they got, quite frankly, battered. Yeah. you know, they did. But their support was amazing. In actual fact, like, I just wanted South Korea just to get a goal for the fans. I didn't want it to turn into too much of like a smashing. But yeah, France just dominated, and that's the France that we expected to turn up, and they did. And for the fans as well, they did.
But for an England team, right, with all of this newfound success comes a lot of pressure. Yeah. You know, England's not the most friendly country when it comes to their national teams performing or underperforming.
Yeah.
That it could quickly turn if they don't come out well against Scotland to kick off the tournament. Obviously, they've got plenty of players to know that it's not really about the media. But what is it going to take to rally everyone in the same way that the men's team did last summer?
Yeah, we do have a history of sort of turning our backs on our players sometimes when they don't necessarily, quote unquote, turn up to play. But I think that being in the stadium the other day, the sort of crowd that this sort of game attracted was so much more inclusive, and the vibe in there was so much less aggy than a normal game, that I think everyone's just on the on a train to kind of support women's football as a whole. And I think, yes, there is a high expectation of our team. Yes, we do have some of the best players in the world. And so the expectation is very, very high. But I think actually this World Cup is just a celebration of women's football as a whole. And we should just be celebrating that together.
But
we also do want to win, guys.
But there could be some criticisms if they don't.
Yes, I think there will be if they don't do well.
If they don't win, or if they don't, what let's set the bar of what success would be, right? So win the She Believes Cup over, as Ellie mentioned, Japan, US, and Brazil, right? Powerhouses. A great finish to the last World Cup. Where do you set the bar for success now?
I think from listening to interviews and talking to some of the players themselves, they're going out there to win. They're not going out there to be in the semis or be in the quarters, or, like, you know, they're going out there because they expect to win. And they actually believe that they can win, and so does the team, the whole team, the staff behind them. So for them, it's winning or nothing. But for me, I guess personally, like, they're going to get out of the group stages, I think. I put my money in them getting out of the group stages. Anything beyond that will be amazing, but I wouldn't be disappointed if they got knocked out at like the semis or quarter. I mean, it would be a little bit, but I wouldn't be harsh on them, I guess.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question, a personal question.
Yeah, right? Go on.
Going back, you have your chance to do it all over your career, your footballing career, right?
Yeah.
The infrastructure that Ellie mentioned in his preview being built in.
Yeah.
Would you have stuck to football all the way through?
I would have stuck to football, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've asked myself that question a few times, I think, because there was a point when I was like a few years ago, I was like, oh, I'm not like too old to get back into it, but I kind of am at this level. And I went and trialed for like a WLS2 team, and they invited me back for pre-season. But I was already like working for myself. I had my own business set up, and the demand to play was so much higher, and the girls were a lot younger. And I don't think they actually knew my age at first, because when they asked, when I told them, they were like, oh, because I think they just think I look a bit younger, and they just would expect me to say like 19 or something.
But
I was
19?
In my 20s. Yeah, I'm not 19. Mum's upstairs waiting for me.
She bring you lunch?
Yeah, she bring me packed lunch. Yeah. No, that's my girlfriend. So I think if I could go back, I probably would. I would definitely give it a crack. 100%. Yeah, 100%. It's different. It's different now, but it's exciting. It's really, really exciting.
That's great. I just keep replaying some of the stuff that Ellie said in my head of just where it's going. And I'm like, why can't everyone do that? You know?
Yeah.
And the US, I think, has rested on its laurels, both on the men's and the women's side over the last years. And there needs to be a revamping of things. We've seen some insecurity within the leagues, and obviously building that foundation from the youth level, doubling the amount of participants, you know, youth rates are through the roof, as Ellie said. It's just a really exciting time. And while it might be early to hold them to a standard of being the best in the world through and through, I do think that they're one of the few favorites for this World Cup.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't think we can't be crowned the best in the world until we win a World Cup, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I think we've got really good opportunity. But yeah, watching France the other day, they are, I mean, you watched the game.
Yeah.
They were so dominant in that game.
Yeah.
And super strong and moved the ball around really quickly. And Renard was just sick.
Yeah.
Like, I was just watching, even when she didn't have the ball, I was just watching her sort of demand that back line, and it was really cool to watch.
But it also just shows you also that just, you know, and I spoke about it in the last episode briefly, of just how important set pieces are too.
Yeah.
When you start to get, when England has to play France at some point and you have a Renard that can match up against anyone and know that they're a constant threat in the box.
Yeah.
It can change things, right? So if you match up equally, or it's dead middle, possession, everything, no one's giving each other an inch, and you can get those set pieces and know that you've built up that rhythm. They were trying, like, they had like some trick set pieces that they
attempted
that
they
didn't pull off.
Yeah.
But just the importance of set pieces, you can tell that they are a well-rounded team. And it'll be interesting to see if England can provide the same box of tricks.
Yeah, when they went 3-0 up, like, they were comfortable, and you could see them trying, like, individually as well, like, they were putting on a show, which is really sick to see. Like, you know they played as a team and they were very dominant, and they got that 3-0 cushion, and then they were all very comfortable to start like nutmegging the other team and I mean, the car sort of high off bicycle kick volley that wasn't allowed was an amazing goal. Like, it was a sick goal. It was offside.
Yeah, but the one before that, she tried to do a full bicycle kick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the one that gave her the confidence to go, oh, all right, I can finish.
Again. I'm now a striker.
And she smashed that volley. It was amazing.
Yeah.
One other thing about the France match before we listen to Beth Mead, English international, by the way, is Amiri, I believe her name was. Amiri something. She's a left back.
Number 10.
And she wears number 10.
Yeah, I know. How rad is that? Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking,
because she was playing very high up the pitch. She was super fast.
As you should when you're in that position okay?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I was confused. I was like, wait, is she number 10? But why is she on the left? And then I was like, oh no, she's a wing back.
Yeah. I saw her tracking back at one point. I was like, she's going to eventually stop. She's not going to go all the way to the back line. And then she went to the back line. And then I went on to the live score app and I looked at it and I was like, number 10 is playing
left back.
Left back.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Sick.
It's great. But moving on to Beth Mead, who is going to tell us all the things that are on her mind. So let's roll that.
Hashtag Copper90Icons.
Hi, I'm Beth Mead. I'm a winger for Arsenal women's team. I actually think I had a recovery session for Arsenal on a Monday and I was actually sat on the watt bike and I had my phone or my earphones in, just doing recovery, and I remember Phil ringing me and I think he just rang me and said, I'm letting you know that I'm putting you in my squad to go to for the qualifiers for Wales. I think I'd just spoken to him a month before then for She Believes and he told me I was on standby, so obviously that was a bit disappointing to miss out on that tournament, but he told me I was doing the right things and if I continued doing that, which he stuck to his word and I stuck to mine on the football pitch, I actually ended up getting selected. And I actually love the fact that it communicates so well, whether you're doing good or bad. It's nice to know where you stand with your manager. And Phil actually gave me a phone call to basically let me know that I was in the squad. And then we received the email later on that day. But it was nice for him to communicate that first before I actually just received an email out of the blue. I think the way England have always done it was through emails, and you literally received an email whether you were on standby or selected. So that personal touch was always nice to receive. A phone call, I guess it makes it a little bit more personal and you feel a little bit more wanted and important within the squad. So I was actually, when I received my email for the World Cup selection, I was actually laid in bed. It was 8 o'clock in the morning, they told us we were going to receive the email, and I think I set my alarm for bang on then because I didn't want to sit there refreshing. So yeah, I opened it at 8 o'clock and it luckily said that I was selected and I was going on that plane to France, which was, I mean, I'd have started jumping around, but I'd have probably looked a little bit stupid if anyone had seen me, but no, it was the best feeling ever. The difference between club and national team, putting the kit on, I guess, can be a number of different things. I guess the players around you are completely different philosophy, cultures. I mean, we've got a number of players at Arsenal from the Netherlands, from Germany, from Austria, from Denmark. So I guess everyone's got their own way of going forward, whereas at England, we've kind of all had a similar journey in... We've been through youth, we've learnt the same things, we've been in similar tournaments, we have the same philosophy, the coaches do, you know, so there's no better feeling than putting your shirt on with the three lions on for your country. I was 12 when I started playing for England and it's felt like a long journey to get to the women's team. Even though it was probably a little bit of an anticlimax, we drew 0-0 and we were a bit disappointed against Wales. Actually, when I got on the field in front of 30,000 people at Southampton Stadium, like, that was a pretty amazing feeling. I guess, yeah, the mindset of a female footballer can be quite differently to a male footballer. I know, obviously, your pay packet at the end of the month is probably a lot different. And at the end of your career, a lot of people at the moment, I know this season for Arsenal, a couple of us have been doing our coaching badges, some people doing master's degrees. Because, yeah, right now, obviously, the game is getting better and the money is getting better. But it's still not enough for females to be able to retire and that be it at the end of it, you know. So, yeah, I think a lot of us have. I mean, I made sure I got my degree before I managed to come into football, which I was lucky enough to do it when I was still part-time at Sunderland. But yeah, I think we do have kind of an entrepreneur mindset because we have to, you know. After football, I guess you've just got to have a backup plan, you know. Alex, she's amazing at what she does and she's been lucky enough to be in the football lifestyle still, but not everyone's got them skills or that opportunity, I guess. So yeah, I guess we've all got to think about our own, if we want to make our own brands. Like, I know people like Jill Scott is doing like a football camp for young kids up north and in Manchester so that she can hopefully do that after and she makes a name. I mean, she's an amazing player and everyone knows who she is, but yeah, people have got to have a backup plan, I guess. I think the things I've learned about myself through football, I guess as a player I've probably changed a lot in a good way, I hope. I guess I was quite, when I was younger, I just got on the pitch and I didn't think about anything. When I used to play for a boys team, a lot of people used to laugh at me, parents used to laugh at me. And my first ever memory of playing for that team was actually going into a 50-50 with the biggest boy on the pitch. And everyone has obviously started hearing someone crying and I jumped back up and the boy was on the floor crying. So I guess I still have that mindset of I go on the pitch and do what comes to mind and what comes to me, but I guess there's a lot more in my game. I guess I've grown a little bit as a player, I'm more confident, and I was being a number nine for most of my career and now I'm a winger, so I guess the mindset of an assist is just as good as a goal sometimes.
Copper 90. Copper 90.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think she's going to have a really good World Cup.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm excited to watch her play. And against Scotland as well, first game. Woo! Big game.
One of the things that I was talking to a few of these girls about, and especially Beth, was this idea that I think they did a panel on how they wanted to receive information, right? So they discussed within the team how you would like to receive news within the team, right? Do you want an email or a phone call?
Magazine?
These types of things. Yeah. If you had to receive that information in one way, what would you do? So she's talking about, they said at 8 o'clock, she's going to get an email. So she's sitting, making sure she doesn't want to refresh or whatever. It seems so nerve-wracking.
Is that what they all decided on, an email?
Or they
had it like separately, like people had different, like I'd ask for like a pager.
Yeah.
Go old school. or like a pigeon.
A courier pigeon.
Yeah.
Just bring
it. Or like an owl, like Harry Potter.
Yeah. Just drop something at your doorstep.
Yeah. What about you?
It'd be I'd want it like they're doing all those gender reveal things now in like a balloon where you like pop the balloon and you like either you made the team or you didn't.
Yeah.
Pop the balloon and it's like, if it's red, you're in the squad. No, I don't know. So when I was in the 30 for the 2010 World Cup, right?
Yeah.
So they had to cut it down to 23. The main thing they said at the end of that day was, have your phones on you until 11 p.m. because we'll be letting everyone know if they're in the squad or not.
That's
by
cool.
11 p.m. So we just played against Czech Republic. We were all back at the hotel. Everyone's sort of waiting around. 30 of us, right? Had put in four years into this cycle. And 10 p.m. rolled by, no message. 10:30 rolled by, no message. 11 o'clock rolls by, no message. 12:30 in the morning, I got the call to come down and meet the coaching staff.
So they hadn't even said anything yet?
They hadn't said anything. So obviously when we got down there, there were 7 of us. So we did the math that there was like 23 players missing from this meeting.
Yeah.
That we weren't going to be selected for the squad. But it was a really terrible thing to do.
That's brutal, mate.
But as time has gone on, I've healed.
Yeah.
But like, I've also thought about like, what can you do?
Yeah.
Obviously, there were some last minute decisions, right? So when you're building a squad, you obviously want to bring as few defenders as possible so you can bring as many attackers as possible. So if you have somebody who can play center half and left back or left back and left midfield, you can start to use those as like kind of versatile players.
Yeah.
So you can start to bring in more strikers. Because if you're a manager and you get that feeling of like, I've got this streaky striker, hasn't done well in the national team, has done really well at the club team, I've got this gut instinct, I want to throw him in and see what happens. You want to have those at your disposal, but you don't want to leave yourself too exposed in case you have injuries and whatnot. So building a roster in last minute is quite difficult, but it was really torturous for me to go through that, especially because they gave a very hard deadline of like when to have your phone
and then went
on
over
you by,
it
and went over it by a couple hours till I heard anything. It was an 11th hour thing, but like an update would have been nice.
Yeah.
You know, still working through some stuff. Keep your phone on you. When you're radio silence, 2 hours of radio silence on something that you've been working that long towards can be torturous. So like think about Beth. She made it, but there's a couple others that didn't.
Yeah. I wonder how they... I guess they would have found out by email everyone else.
Yeah.
Not by pigeon.
Yeah.
We used to do a thing... Well, I didn't. But when I was on pirate radio, there was this thing called destroy and rebuild. And it would happen like every year kind of thing, and we would know that the boss would be listening to every single show that was going out on air. And at some point, if you walked out the studio during your show or at the end, sorry, and there was someone stood there, usually the radio manager, that would be it. That's you're off air now.
Really?
Yeah.
And it was like
called,
done.
That was your last show. No warning. And it was called, this is pirate radio, by the way, so there's no sort of like you know, there's no proper managerial thing, structure put in place. Yeah, it was called destroy and rebuild, and like everyone be on it on Twitter, like hashtag destroy and rebuild, like this is what's going to happen. Thankfully it never happened to me, but I saw it happen to a few people, and it's pretty brutal. Like,
great for entertainment, terrible for the person that it's happening
exactly,
to.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah, like how did you cope with that afterwards?
Quite honestly, it was really rough.
Right.
The roughest part was I had to fly the next day to a match. And I started the match on the bench just because I was pretty distraught. Went to warm up the start of the second half in Chicago. And behind one of the goals in the stand was a set of fans. And they were chanting US Reject as I was warming up. And that was like that was the closest I ever came from doing like an Eric Cantona and just going straight 2 feet to the chest of a fan and literally punching somebody. Because it was like... I'm pretty immune to most criticisms, and you hear some wild stuff in a stadium, but that was the one where it was just like, while us as club teams should hate each other, like I represent your country and you should be rallying for us. Yeah. And they were just like cutting me to my core. And obviously they're trying to get into my head, and it did. It really, really worked. So it was pretty rough for a while. But ultimately, I look back and I had some incredible experiences. I went back into the national team after that World Cup. I had more caps. I had more runs. But it was obviously a long time coming. I turned down bigger money offers along the way for the sake of taking small steps, make sure I'm playing regularly to stay in the national team pool. So in retrospect, you kind of rethink all of that and go, like, I should have done it differently. But, you know, it's a lot of people that didn't get into the national team.
Yeah.
So I try to keep that perspective as much as possible, but then allow myself once in a while to go into a corner and cry.
We're here for you, mate. The podcast team are here for you. Don't worry about it.
I feel much better just getting that off my chest.
I feel like therapy, isn't it?
You guys got to carry that for the rest of your life, but I've washed my hands clean of this drama.
All right, so we've got an inside score from the opposing team as well. Scotland, should we give it a listen?
Scotland may be heading to their first ever World Cup, but don't let the debutants tag fool you, as this team, led by the much talked about Arsenal star Kim Little, showed their abilities and character in qualifying, with multiple never say die come from behind victories that saw them top their group and qualify directly above their then far higher ranked group opponent, Switzerland. Whilst usually a team debuting in the tournament would focus on getting the easy points and target the lesser opponents in the group, the Scottish have all eyes on their first match and their toughest group opponents, England, who as well as being the opponents in the historic old enemy rivalry, pummeled the Scots at their Euro 2017 opening match 6-0. Whilst as previously mentioned, their opening match against England already provides enough backstory to fire the Scots up, there is one extra narrative tied into this game that proves that before a ball is even kicked, the Scots have already won. As it's this exact fixture, Scotland vs England, that in 1972 debuted the newly reformed Scotland women's team. That 1972 side had to travel around in a milk van and played that game against England, wearing shirts bought at a jumble sale. However, 47 years later, the Scottish women's team is comprised of elite players from some of the world's biggest clubs that were sent off in front of a record-breaking 18,000 Scottish football fans who were embracing the women's game in huge numbers. Since 2017, there's been a 59% spike in participation by under-12s. And since 2013, the numbers playing for clubs in Scottish women's football has almost doubled. On top of that, the Scottish Building Society has pledged a significant sponsorship of the National SWF League, the second division has been raised to 10 sides, a TV deal has been struck with BBC Alba, and next season, two Scottish clubs for the very first time will play in the Women's Champions League. Much of this has been credited to the relentless work of Swede Anna Signell, whose impressive 12-year coaching tenure, on top of taking Scotland to their first ever Euros, even more impressively, played a huge role in the introduction of the academy system and relentlessly pushed for greater investment and higher standards in the Scottish women's game. But after taking the team to Euro 2017, where they only missed out on the knockout stages on goal difference, Signell moved on to Pastors New in Finland. For most teams, losing as influential and as important of a figurehead as their longtime coach could potentially create a devastating power vacuum and structural damage. But luckily, the Scots found a worthy replacement in former national team captain, Shelley Kerr. Born in a tiny village in the hills of West Lothian, the no-nonsense, tough-as-nails mentality of rural Scotland that was instilled in Kerr was needed so that the former defender could thrive in the then extremely underfunded Scottish women's game. As a player, international duty saw Kerr having to pay £50 of her own money just to stay in the team hotel and having to share tracksuits with teammates, where one would wear the tracksuit top and the other would wear the tracksuit bottoms. Earning her first cap in 1989, Kerr retired shortly after due to the birth of her daughter, but returned to the national team 8 years later and only a day after a biopsy brought upon a medical scare. The lack of funding at the time also meant juggling careers, where Kerr balanced her time on the pitch with a production line job at the Mitsubishi Electrical Plant in Livingston, where she stayed on for 17 years, working her way up to management level. Whilst many would look back in anger at the injustices of the era, Kerr proudly boasts of the time, crediting it for giving her the discipline and courage to thrive in the game. And perhaps it was this courage that gave her the belief to apply and successfully become the first female manager in British men's senior football, where she took charge of Stirling University men, leading the team to consistent top five league finishes and the British University's championship final in 2014-15, as well as also establishing an under-20 program as a pathway to the full team for players in her time in charge. Whilst getting a result against their British rivals may still be a long shot, if anyone's got the courage to take it to the third best team in the world, it's Shelley Kerr's Scotland.
Inside score.
I actually don't think it's a long shot.
No?
I think they're going to do
all right. That's only
because
they have a bunch of Arsenal players.
No,
and they're just rallying.
No. Well, yeah, they do have that. Yeah, they have Lisa Evans from Arsenal. Obviously, they have Kim Little from Arsenal as well, but Caroline Weir from Man City. And
Emma Mitchell
and Erin Cuthbert from Chelsea as well. And then they've got West Ham player. I'm pretty sure they've got another Man City player. They have a strong squad. So I feel like people are underestimating them a little bit.
It's wild that this is their first World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
That's so bizarre.
So they must be stoked as well. They must be so up for it. And like Eddie said as well, Shelley Kerr is now the manager, obviously, another Arsenal legend. Where is West Lothian?
Wow, that's where she's from. That question, because I was going to ask you if you know where it is.
I think it's somewhere from the Game of Thrones. That's what it sounds like.
I refuse to do these, do the stereotypes, but I'm just thinking of like any battle scene.
West Lothian.
That's
Shelley
taken
Kerr,
place.
Breaker of Chains.
Like, yeah, anywhere, any battle scene that's just like rolling hills, rain coming down sideways. Like,
is it? It's in green. Scotland, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah,
yeah. But that's the way I imagined it the first time I heard that. but it sounds like it is a very rural place. So
yeah.
I couldn't be.
Yeah, her story sounds really, really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I honestly think that it's going to be a good game, and obviously, like, it's one of the oldest derbies ever to exist. So historically, it's always been an entertaining game.
And one of the things that's interesting, and it's such a Scottish mentality thing, is of their seven victories in the route to France, four of them were come from behind wins.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Four of them
clawed their way back and took the points.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good game. Yeah.
They're going to be tough to beat.
Predictions?
I mean, it would be foolish to not go with England on this one. They've got so much momentum. I think they were undefeated, right, in qualifying? 8 of 8 or something like that in qualifying?
Yes, but they lost their game, their most recent game against New Zealand, which was, again, unexpected.
Yeah, but New Zealand was pretty decent in that match, right?
Yeah, they played a really good game, yeah.
But I'm going to go with I'm going to go with England for the sake of the beer throwing and all the things that I want to see happen this summer. So England 2-0.
I'm going to go 3-1 England.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Goal fest.
Yeah. Goal fest. Love a goal fest.
You're such a striker.
Love goals.
Yeah. I'd be like, 0-0, hard fought draw. Everyone wins.
Yeah. Sometimes you're like, no. When there's just goals going in, I forget which team I'm supporting. I'm just like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't support that team.
Yeah.
But it was a sick goal, so I might cheer it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it.
That's the end of the show. Yeah. God, that went quick.
This is Football Inside Out. We'll be back tomorrow. Make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Acast, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed this, leave us a review, preferably 5 stars. Big fan of 5 stars. Hotels, reviews, all that stuff.
And get in touch, because we'd love to hear from you as well. Send us an email and voice notes to footballinsideout@copa90.com. We'd love to share your thoughts on the show, and tweet us using the hashtag Copa90InsideOut. That's it from us. We'll see you tomorrow.
See ya.
Bye.
Copa 90, Football Inside Out.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.